Welcome to another brand new episode of Take a Shelfie. It's a podcast about beer and friendship. I'm Jeff Martin, and with me as always is a man who got into an argument with a pair of clippers and lost, Matt Prince. Matt, explain yourself.
So since the pandemic started, I haven't wanted to go to the barber to get my hair cut. And I had some clippers, and my wife was like, I'll do it. So I put on the little one setting, and she, you know, shears my hair off, and it's always been great. And yesterday she for some reason took the number one thing off and was left with just the razor, and she gave my head my hair one stroke through, and the look on her face was just of utter dread, and she was terrified because she knew I'd be so upset. And I was like, what? And she's like, I took the thing off by accident. I don't know why I did it. I just did it. And she's like, it's actually not that bad. It looks like pretty much the same length. And then I took my phone out. I put the camera on, flipped it around to look at myself. The difference was so noticeable. And, you know, I was like, no, we're going to have to just get rid of all the hair. So now, I'm pretty much bald. I have like a 5 o'clock shadow. I really felt foolish. Like I looked foolish. I never have.
No, Matt, you sent pictures to the group chat, the group thread, the group text. And my first reaction is that it looks great. You've got like the 5 o'clock, or like at this point now, it's sort of like the 9 o'clock shadow going on your face. And then the 5 o'clock shadow on your head. Like it's sort of like a short Jason Statham look.
Hey, I'll take it.
You don't look foolish at all. I'll tell you a moment when I looked foolish, or I felt foolish this morning, because I forgot what this episode's theme was. And so I had to drive around to a couple different locations to try to get some beers. Because, Matt, we're now at almost the end of season two. And we're sort of going to go all the way back to the beginning, because we talked about our shared history in beer, and we've talked about the beers that got us into beer. But we've both wondered, are we still into those beers? And so we both went and found some of the beers that got us into beer. You did it a couple weeks ago, or maybe a week ago, or a couple days ago, or whatever. I did it this morning. I tried to go to Pinocchio's, but I guess the person running the beer garden was late, so I had to get a full six-pack of one of the beers. Then another one, I went down the street and had to find something that I haven't said the name of in at least 10 years. And then the other one, I've got like a beer I haven't had in my home in 15 years, one that I got from Pinocchio's but had too many of because I had to get a six-pack instead of just one. And I've got... Is it the stovepipe can? Like the 19-ounce can-ish?
Yeah.
That's the third beer. It's a stovepipe can because I didn't want to commit to a full six-pack of that. So that's foolish because I was running around like a chicken with my head cut off this morning.
Yeah, Jeff. Well, there could be worse problems. You were running around like a chicken with your head cut off, but you got more beer than you anticipated. So that really isn't a problem. It's just,
we'll find out.
Yeah. Unless you don't like the beer anymore. I'm excited because the beers that I'm going to be drinking, I haven't had for a long time and I forget what they taste like. It'll be fun to kind of reminisce and see how my tastes have changed, but it'll also be interesting to see what flavor profiles got me into craft beer.
I think it's also going to be interesting because we are 5 years apart in age. And so the time that we got into craft beer was a different scene. And so the beers that got us into craft beer might be slightly different. Matt, I'm going to the first one, of mine.
Okay.
And this is the one that I haven't thought of in at least a decade. And it is Magic Hat number 9.
Ooh, damn.
I can distinctly remember going to Quizzo at PJ Henry's, JP Henry's. It's one of those two initial Irish type sports bars. We went every Tuesday. Kurt was the host. We dominated Quizzo as you and I still do to this day. And the true first beer that I ever had that made me realize beer could taste good was Grolsch.
Yeah.
But I couldn't source that on short notice, or I wasn't looking for it. But they had this all the time at that bar, number 9. And so I ordered it, and that sort of became my regular go-to drink there until the next beer, which I couldn't get, so I'll mention that, which was Flying Fish XPA. Right. I couldn't get that because they've since changed the recipe, so I can't tell you whether or not it's the same. So
right.
I've poured myself a little number 9 here. It's the Not Quite Pale Ale.
Yeah, it's an apricot pale ale, right?
They don't say that outright. It's a sort of dry, crisp, refreshing ale whose mysterious and unusual palate will swirl across your tongue with subtle notes of fruit, just fruit, and a floral hop bitterness. Beyond that, we dare not tell you more.
Okay.
All right, Magic Hat. Good for you. But yeah, I think generally everyone understands it to be apricot.
That beer to me is so weird. It's like such like a moment in time beer. Like no one drinks that anymore, but they still make it. So I guess people do drink it, but like that was like such a popular beer for such like, it was like a one hit wonder. Like everyone was listening to it. Everyone was drinking it. And then it just disappeared.
It truly, truly was a moment in time beer, this number 9. And you know what? It tastes exactly like that time.
Ooh.
I am suddenly zipped back to grad school and just after college. It tastes exactly the same. It's actually a little warming, which is odd because it's a low ABV. I guess that might be the dryness of it.
Right.
It's definitely apricot. I don't know why they're bothering to not say it's apricot.
So, Jeff, the big question is, do you still like it?
No. No. It's fine. It's very sweet. Despite the fact that they say it's dry and that I said it's warming. Like, it's a little surprisingly boozy. But it's very sweet. Like, the front of it is very sweet with that apricot fruitiness. And, no, not into it. Not into it at all. And this is one of the ones that I had to get a six-pack of. So now I don't know what I'm going to do with the other five.
Yeah, Jeff, I'll take one off your hands because I would also like to be jumping a time machine and remember what that was like. For my first beer, I picked one, and it's a brewery that we mention all the time. It just so happens to be the first beer that wasn't like a lager or a pilsner that I enjoyed. I was in my frat house, Phi Mu Alpha Symphonia Music Fraternity, got to give a shout out. And I was in my buddy Christian Pronitis's room, and I opened his fridge, and I was just expecting to find like Lion's Head or Yingling. And there was a six pack of Troganator from Trogs, and it's a Doppelbach. And I had no idea what that meant. Didn't matter. It was cool looking. It was different. So I grabbed one, popped the top off, and just started drinking. And I was like, whoa, this is not like anything I've ever had before. And Matt, I didn't dislike it.
Matt, Trogs, I don't think was distributing enough or big enough to make it into bars and beer distributors when I was first getting into craft beer. They were founded in 96. I graduated in college in 2004. So, I mean, they've been around for almost 10 years at that point, but I don't recall them being a thing. So that sort of tells you what the 5 years will do. It makes Trogs more readily available. You also went to school a little bit more towards the middle of the state than
right.
I did.
Yeah.
So tell me about the Troganator. It looks, you know, I can't remember the last time I poured a Troganator. It looks very red.
Yeah, it's like, it's very much like a ruby red. A nice, like, I would say when I first poured it, like a half inch head, lots of floating bubbles, very clear. The smell is very sweet, like almost like a syrupy sweet. So I'm a little worried. This bottle I actually got out of a variety pack from Christmas. So it's been sitting that long. We had this at my in-law's house and I grabbed the bottle before I left. So I'm going to give it a sip. I mean, already I'm smelling it and how strong of it. It's like a bready sweetness. And as someone who was just drinking lots of like Lion's Head and Yingling, this would definitely pose a very different profile than those beers. So that's probably why it was such like a shocking experience. Well, here we go. Let's see how this is.
And Matt, as you're sipping, I want to sort of draw a line from the beers that you would drink in college, like Lion's Head and the American Macros. They are very sweet lagers. Bud has a very green apple-y taste, for instance. And so like the sweetness to walk the line of the sweetness to those to the sweetness of Trogonator, I can see where the mental connection might happen and that could get you into it. What are you thinking as you're sipping it?
You know, it's still good. It's 8.2%. So it's so sweet. It's like it's very dangerous. It's only 25 IBUs. So we're talking about like really, really sweet, no bitterness whatsoever. I mean, very little. Goes down really easily. Very like sweet roll, like kind of like a sweet roll. It's got this bright sweetness up front, a nice breadiness as you continue to sip. It's fine. Like, it's a nice beer and it's a popular beer. I mean, this is a beer that just was redesigned. Their can art was just redesigned. So it's on its third look since it came out. Trogs had their original marketing campaign. Then they did this whole sweeping change. And then they've taken this horned, bearded Troganator and they've changed it again. So the fact that it's been through all of its looks, it's staying around, people still enjoy it. It's a pleasing beer. It's nice to know that I still enjoy it. The Doppelbock style is one that I have just recently started to jump back into. I enjoyed in two episodes ago, our Philadelphia episode, I drank a Simulator from Human Robot. That's a Doppelbock. So it's true to style. Really nice beer. You know, good on you, Trogs. This is one that has stood the test of time.
So I don't even have to ask. You still like it?
Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to buy anymore. Okay. So I just want to be clear about something. Like, I'm not going to go find a 12 pack of cans of Trogonator. It's not going to be one that you're going to find in my fridge. If I go somewhere and they have Trogonator, like if I go to a friend's house and they have Trogonator and that's, you know, I might choose it, but I wouldn't buy it.
So Matt, I'm going next to the Stovepipe can.
Okay.
And it's a beer that I've had a decent amount of times. But it seems I haven't checked it in on Untappd since 2017, which is 4 years ago. And I can't imagine that's true. I think I probably just reached a point where with this beer where I have had enough times I didn't bother checking in anymore. But it's a beer that I would find through other craft beer fans. Like I would go to cast parties and I would hang out with other craft beer fans. And I would go to bad bars. Like we would go to John's in Media for karaoke on Sunday nights. And this was, you know, one of the good beers they had, and it is 60 Minute.
Oh, Dogfish Head. Yeah.
You were making a little charades game while I was talking there and asking if I was talking about Two Hearted, and I very nearly got Two Hearted because that is a beer I drank a lot when I went to Quotations a lot. But it was preceded by 60 Minute, another number-focused IPA from Dogfish Head. What is there to say about 60 Minute? I mean, everyone knows the story at this point. It's continuously hopped. Sam set up an old, like, vibrating football game table to shake the hops bit by bit over the entire course of the 60-minute boil to give it its unique characteristic. How much does that actually provide? I don't know. So it's a legendary IPA from a very, very famous brewery, Dogfish Head. They have become known outside of our little hamlet here in the tri-state area. So let's just go back into it and see if it's as good as I remember.
My experience with 60 Minute, Jeff, has always been it's very bitter. It's like the quintessential old school East Coast IPA. Like when you think, I always think of 60 Minute. I think of Hop Devil. I think you know, those two in particular stand out to me, because Hop Devil, obviously Victory, Downingtown, it's local. And then Dogfish Head, not far from us either. And I always enjoyed it. It was always a very distinct beer for me. Like, to me, you, if you had a sip of 60 Minute, you knew that was 60 Minute. It's its own thing. And I always enjoyed it when I first started drinking. As my taste buds have changed, I don't prefer it as much because it is so bitter. But Jeff, is it that bitter?
It is. It is okay. That bitter. But I think when it was out, when it was first out, like, there were two kinds of IPAs. There was the West Coast IPA, and there was the British IPA, which is what Flying Fish Hopfish was. It's what Yards IPA was. The British-inspired IPA that had a more, you know, even a more malty backbone than the West Coast IPA. And so this, even before the, well, I guess in New England, the New England IPAs were a thing. But this was the first to sort of make its own American IPA category. It is that bitter, but I'm not mad about it, Matt.
Well, and Jeff, you love a West Coast IPA, which is more bitter than a New England IPA. So you're not adverse to the bittering hops. You're not adverse to those more aggressive, aggressively bitter flavor characteristics, flavor profiles. So I'm not surprised that you still enjoy this.
I think in a world that is dominated by the fruity, the juicy, it's nice to have something with a lot of hop character that is also, yes, bitter, but also crisp. Like, it's a kind of drink.
Yeah.
It's really nice. And it's definitely like a top deck at the shore beer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, sitting out, you know, you've decided not to go down to the terrible bars, Seattle City, because they're all real bad, the bars in Seattle City, and you're just hanging at home, and you're gonna have a couple of these, because, like, the bitterness with the sea air, yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I like that image. I'm in your image right now. I feel it. I hear it. I see it. That's what I always think about when it comes to, like, more bitter beers. You know, a lot of people say, oh, this is really hoppy. When they taste bitterness, there's the common misconception that bitterness equals hoppy. We know that's not true. Bitterness is because the hops that you've chosen to be in a beer and how you've released those hops create the bitterness. I mean, does it say on the bottle, Jeff, what hops are in 60 Minute? I'd imagine it's some of those old school
on the stovepipe can, you mean?
Yes.
It doesn't yeah. Say
but I'd imagine it's like some of the old school sea hops. Like, I'd imagine you're probably having Centennial and Cascade. You know, that's kind of usually what I think of when I think of more bitter IPAs, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, the sea hops, like the probably the hops from the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. So yeah, I mean, to answer the question that you didn't ask, but I mean, we're asking it of every beer that tried. Yeah, I still like it.
Yeah, good.
Like you said about Troganator, am I gonna go out and regularly buy 60 Minute? Probably not, but it is one of the only craft beers that's, like, available at some locations. And I'll happily order it.
Yeah.
What's your next beer?
So my next beer is a beer that I first enjoyed at a bar in Fairmount, which is a neighborhood of Philadelphia called Bridges. I remember I was there with some friends. It was towards the end of our night. And this beer was on special. And up until this point, I was kind of anti anything hop forward, like any ale that was hop forward. I was drinking, you know, Left Hand Milk Stout, and I was drinking Stout's Gold Lager. Those were, like, the beers that I gravitated towards, or Sam Adams Boston Lager, or Sam Adams Oktoberfest. This was the first beer that I remember enjoying that was a hop forward ale. And it became kind of like a go-to for me. And I think it's a go-to for a lot of people in our area. And that is Yard's Philadelphia Pale Ale.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah. And this is, to me, like the quintessential spring into summer beer. When they put it in cans for the first time, it was a great day. And listen, do I regularly look for this beer? No, but I still have a nostalgia for it. That when the spring and summer start, cracking open a can or even popping open a bottle of Yard's Philadelphia Pale Ale really hits the spot. I've always thought of it as a very floral pale ale, like a biscuity pale ale. It's hopped with Simcoe, which lends a little bit of like a creaminess to it. I don't think I've had this beer for a few years, so I'm excited to have a sip. I mean, it's so clear. It is dry hopped. You know, everyone thinks, oh, dry hopped, so it's hazy. No, it is dry hopped. A lot of beers are. I think that's another one of those common misconceptions. Oh, it's a dry hop beer. It's hazy. This is clear as can be, dry hopped. I'm excited. Here we go.
Now, Matt, you mentioned that it's not something that you ever or often grab from the shelf, but I'll tell you this, I have had this beer very often, very recently, because we've talked to my younger brother on the show, Dan, and he's becoming a little bit of a hazy boy himself. He's starting to enjoy some of the New England's, but my older brother, Drew, is not a huge craft beer guy. He likes beer, so at every family gathering, he has a Yard's variety pack. And so he's typically grabbing the Loyal Lager and drinking that. He thinks that I'm there for the IPA, but I'm there for Philly Pale Ale, because Philly Pale Ale, in my estimation, is a perfect beer. Do you think that you agree, having sipped it? Because I saw your face.
It is. It's so good. You know, it kind of makes me feel stupid because I spend time following bottle shops on Instagram. I spend time receiving emails from our local bottle shop, Pinocchio's. I've gone to 320 Market. Recently I actually went to your place, Beer Guys in Havertown, to look for the freshest, newest hazy IPA, while all the while this beautiful, layered, crisp, like a bouquet of Simcoe sits on the shelves for $3 a can. And it makes me feel silly because I'm like, this is a beer that I've always enjoyed. I still enjoy, and I can have it anytime I want. And I don't have to go anywhere. Like, I don't have to go anywhere special to find it. I don't need to look anywhere. It's there.
Yard's Philly Pale Ale will never do you wrong. It is such an approachable beer too. Like, you mentioned before all the people who say how much they dislike things that are hoppy, because they don't like things that are super bitter. And this is bitter, but it's not super bitter. And it also has hop character in it, something that you can discern as something other than bitterness. It's such a good beer. Bravo to our friends over at Fifth and Spring Garden, because Yard's Philly Pale, it's the best.
And you know what, Jeff? You can think about beers that are like that region's beer or that city's beer. Like, to me, Sam Adams Boston Lager, no matter what the other breweries in that town do, no matter what Trillium does, no matter what Night Shift does, no matter what Lamplighter does, Boston Lager from Sam Adams is that city's beer. This is Philadelphia's beer. Yard's Philadelphia Pale Ale is, our beer. Tom Kehoe has developed this wonderful pale ale that it's old school, but it's still bright and fresh and crisp and delivers all of these wonderful tasting notes that, you take a sip and you feel like you're sitting in right field waiting for, Bryce Harper to hit a home run to you. Like, you feel like you're at the ballpark, or you feel like you're out back, in Delco in a barbecue with family. Like, there's something about this beer that stands for so much more, that is just so much more. And I'm so pleased that I chose this beer because, you know, I really do think that I think I will buy a 12 pack of this. I think I will keep this in my fridge all summer because it's that good. It's that crushable. It's that sessionable. And to me, it's complex enough that I won't get bored with it. And that's like the key. That's the key of any great, like, sessionable beer. And I'm thrilled. It's fantastic.
So you like it still?
Yes, Jeff.
Yeah. I'm feeling the need to ask this at the end of every year. I think it's just because you did it the first one. Matt, it's interesting that you mentioned that no matter what Trillium does, Sam Adams Boston Lager is always going to be Boston's beer. And no matter what the Tired Hands and the Love Cities, who we love dearly, no matter what they do, Yards Philly Pale Ale is always going to be Philadelphia's beer. The beer I have next, no matter what Russian River does, and, you know, they are longstanding and have been darlings of Northern California for quite some time, but it's, you know, nationally, no matter what Russian River or anyone from San Francisco or San Jose or Northern California in general does, this will always be Northern California's beer. And I'm talking about Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. Sierra Nevada Pale Ale and I go back to the days of St. Bernadette's, our dearly departed parish players. And we would go to this terrible, terrible bar after rehearsal. And that bar is 3 blocks north of where I sit right now. And it's called Craig's. And Craig's had a horrible selection of beer. And I was not a liquor drinker. Still am not. And so I wasn't really that even a craft beer at the time, but I was just brand loyal to the American macro that I liked, and they didn't have it there. And so I was like, okay, well, I hate this other American macro so much that I'm going to go into left field and have Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. And I drank it, and I thought it was terrific. It is entirely made with Cascade because... I know that because they published the recipe on their site for homebrewers. It's made entirely with Cascade. It's a true West Coast IPA. When you talk West Coast IPA, what you're talking about is Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. I realize that it's a pale ale, not an IPA. But, like, this is the profile you're talking about. So let's... I think I had it during quarantine. I think... Or maybe right before quarantine. I was trying to... gather the stubby bottles because I wanted to bottle my homebrew in it. But it's been a good year since I've had it, so let's see.
Yeah, Jeff, it's interesting that you chose Sierra Nevada Pale Ale because we've talked to, you know, many brewers and other beer folk who say that beer starts their journey, and for the most part, it started your journey. So I think my Yards Philadelphia Pale Ale serves the same purpose in terms of my beer journey. But that's Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is another one that I had early on, and very much like the Yards, it kind of changed my approach and my interest in hop forward ales. So Jeff, tell me about Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
So then this is directly from their, from the back of the bottle here. The pale ale in your hand sparked the American craft beer revolution. Bold and complex with pine and citrus notes from whole cone Cascade hops, pale was first brewed in 1980. They've been brewing this beer for 41 years. And introduced a generation to the glory of hops. Our pale ale is still a classic, and Sierra Nevada Brewing Company is still 100% family owned, operated, and argued over. 5.6%. It's terrific. It's very, 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 very good. I mean, it's citrusy. I realize I'm just repeating the words back. But, like, it's got, like, really great, like, the whole citrus fruit. You've made fun of me, and rightfully, for saying rind or peel or flesh of citrus. This is the whole citrus fruit. So it's got all of that. It's got great pine, resinous. It's crystal clear. It's super easy drinking. I think this would sit very well next to your pale ale, Philly pale ale, as a permanent in someone's fridge. I think this is another one that will never do you wrong. We talked about 60 Minute, and it can be a little bitter from time to time. We talked about Schrogenator, and it can be a little boozy from time to time, more than what you're looking for in a given moment. We're not even going to talk about Magic Hat, because it's not good. This beer, like Philly Pale Ale, will never do you wrong.
Yeah, and I think that's like part of the reason why I wanted to do this episode, Jeff, is because I want to start exploring those classics. You know, sometimes it's nice to look where look back to where you came from in order to, you know, better understand where you're going. And in terms of, you know, me as a beer fan, I've had tons and tons of hazy IPAs. I've had sours. I've had pastry stouts. I've had, you know, smoothie sours. And sometimes it's nice to be like, well, you know what? It's kind of nice to just have a crisp old school pale ale, because the brewers that are still opening breweries to this day, they still cite these pale ales as the reason why they're into craft beer and the first craft beer they had. So somehow, some way, every beer we're drinking now, all these modern beers, were slightly inspired by a Sierra Nevada pale ale. Maybe if you're local to Philadelphia, buy a Yards Philadelphia pale ale. You know, those beers that we're enjoying now that people are standing in line forever for, that people are, you know, snapping pictures of and putting on Instagram, they are, they're here only because of these classic pale ales.
We're standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah.
And we truly are. Matt, you made a great point there, because the Danish philosopher Kierkegaard once said, life must be lived forward, but it can only be understood backward. You can only understand where you are by looking back to where you've been. And actually going back to where you've been is even better. And you can do that with these great, timeless beers that are still hanging around. We're never going to get to have Schmitz again. We're never going to get to have any beer for the first time again. But we can revisit moments in our past through our senses. You can listen to a song that takes you back to a subway platform in Philadelphia in 2005. You can watch a movie that puts you in a house on Central Avenue in Ocean City in a summer. You can drink a beer that puts you at Craig's.
Or Bridget's.
Right. And as terrible a beer, as terrible a bar as Craig's is, that's how good a beer Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is. So, listeners, we encourage you to go back and enjoy the beers that got you into beer, because if anything has been taught to us in this episode, which I didn't even expect, it's that they're still worth your time. We also encourage you to go back and listen to all previous episodes of Take a Shelfie, because we are just one episode away from the end of season two. You can find them wherever you get your fine podcasts. Please subscribe. Please leave us a 5-star review. It really, really helps with the promotion of the podcast. We have read the 5-star reviews we've gotten. It's very touching. You can visit us on Instagram at ShelfiePod. We will post a picture each of these fine beers that we're enjoying when the episode drops. You can visit us also at shelfiepod.com. That's where we post all our episodes, and we have a comment section open where you can leave us comments and tell us what were the beers that got you into them, and what was the last time you drank them, and will you drink them again because of that. We've got one episode left for this season. It's a very special episode. We hope you'll enjoy it. That's coming up next week. Until then, I'm Jeff Martin.
And I'm Matt Prince.
Cheers. Cheers.